places, everyone. Quiet on the set. Curtains in five.
Hello, and welcome to Footlights, a community theater podcast coming to you from the studios of WVIK Radio on the campus of Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. I'm Chris Hicks. Joining me today as co-host is the multi-talented Tristan Tapscott.
Oh my gosh, Chris, thank you for that lovely introduction.
Well, you deserve every... You constantly surprise me. Oh, the last surprise was how well you play the drums.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not real good at anything, so I have to be sort of good at many things to really make this work.
Well, it works for you. It works for you.
That's why I'm here. It's just one of the other things
I do. There you go. And we're recording today on October 4th. Our guest today is someone I absolutely adored in Circa 21's Dinner Playhouse current production of The Addams Family in the pivotal role of Uncle Fester. Welcome, Mark Christopher.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for this. This is fun.
Well, we usually start off with history, so go back as far as you want. You can share anything want, including your credit card numbers, your Social Security number.
Well, it started when I was 3 years old, and I'm just kidding. I don't know. So personally, I actually kind of started late in the theater world. Professionally, and I started back in 2014, was my first professional gig, and that was over in upstate New York, and I kind of was still doing a full-time job working at a hospital, and I was like, you know, I had no idea what I was doing in my life. I was just all over the place.
But were you involved in little after
theaters.
School?
Oh, that's where I got my start, so...
Because this is a community theater podcast.
Yes. So community theater was where I began my, kind of like my fun, you know, dipping my toe into the theater world. And so then when I got into, it hit 2014, and I got that first professional gig, I was like, oh, they do this professionally too?
So what was the impetus for you to attempt pro?
So it wasn't until 2018, because I was still working full-time, doing my normal full-time job. It wasn't until 2018 where when I turned a certain age.
You're talking to the oldest person in the room. You cannot shock me.
Listen, in theater, it's dog years. So
it is. I'm 197 in theater years. So
I can't even multiply that high.
When I turned 30, I decided to go, you know what? I'm going to go to New York City. I'm going to try it, and we'll see what happens. And when I moved down there, I had a friend who had a house in New Jersey. And they, you know, my friend Kay and my friend Packy, hello, they, you know, offered me a room to stay in. So I was there for like a little bit, and then, I'm still there now with them. I jumped into the world, and I kind of, you know, my first gig was at a theme park, over in Busch Gardens. And, I did that for like a couple of years in a row for Christmas time. And, then I found a job as a singing server in New York City.
Kind of like the bootleggers?
Kind of like the bootleggers, but mine's more like throughout the whole dinner service. It's not just like a...
You sang while you delivered food?
Sometimes, yeah.
Cool.
So like we, so there's a bunch of us that are, you know, on staff. It's Gail's Broadway Rose. It's in Manhattan in Times Square. And so basically we all take turns singing songs. We sing duets with each other. And there's times where we're so busy that, you know, we're like... you know, carrying, you know, glasses of, you know, alcohol to these tables while we're singing a song, holding the microphone. It's crazy, but it's so much fun. I really enjoy
it. But you didn't really answer my question.
What
was the impetus for you to go pro?
Oh, I don't know.
Something had to spurk.
It was just like, I wasn't happy. You know, there was like a, you know, doing, you know, a muggle job, if you will, was just not bringing me that joy. And so when... Yeah, I think about when I did community theater and I thought about, you know, performing and singing, and I just like the joy that I felt doing that brought me into this whole world thinking, you know what? I want to do that professionally. I want that joy every single day.
So you did the theme park thing, mm-hmm. and then you did some regional theater as well.
Right.
And that's kind of how you ended up at Circa, was through some connections mm-hmm. that you had through that dinner theater circuit.
Yes.
Was that it?
I had connections with Ashley Becker and also Bobby. I met them during a crossover at a different theater. And they reached out to me and about Circa 21, and they're like, hey, I have a part. Would you be interested in auditioning? I was like, absolutely.
So I have to tell you a brief story because of how I know him. So I went to see a production of Just Desserts at Circa 21 years ago, and I said to my wife, I said, I think I know him. That I know this guy. So I got on TikTok. I was still on TikTok at the time. And I was like, it's this guy. TikTok's Mark Christopher was on the stage. And so ever since I've called him TikTok's Mark Christopher, because you did have kind of a small follow. Well, it's,
yeah, a
it's
little,
not
niche,
so small.
A little
yeah.
niche following. So I have a little theater talk, I call it, where I kind of just like, you know, I just talk about theater and, you know, sing songs, sing duets. And it happened during the pandemic. I was just like, you know, trying to find some kind of creative outlet, because I was like, you had no idea what we're going to do. Like, if the theaters were going to come back or... So I was like, you know what? I need some kind of, like, something, because I had no job at the time. I was like, ugh, miserable. So then I found TikTok, you know, much like many artists out there. And I just, yeah, just started, like, playing around with it. And before I knew it, I found a whole community of theater lovers. And, yeah.
Cool.
And yeah. So he was a big deal to me before he...
before you actually got to meet him?
Yes.
What was my question? I had it in my head and it just jumped out. Is it the first time you've played Fester?
No. I played it actually 10 years ago.
Oh, well.
It was in a community theater production, and I remember so, like, so many happy memories in that show. Like, I really love this character, and I really, like, when I played it the first time, I really didn't understand it until, you know, fully until I did it professionally. He's kind of like that feeling, like, knowing what I know now, what would I do differently? So I got the chance to do it a second time, where I was like, oh, knowing what I knew then, I knew what to do for this character now.
Well, I found it particularly interesting when I did my background on the show, that the adapters, or rather that the Adams, the real Adams family, estate would not allow the writers to copy the TV show or the film, and they chose Fester as the pivotal point. And I just, and it really works so well. And I adored your song "To the Moon." That was so precious.
It's a really a precious show, and like I don't think a lot of people give it the credit that it needs, because I've worked on it too. I worked on it years ago with Jason Platt and Aaron Platt. Were Gomez and Morticia back then. But it's a really sweet, well-written piece that just people don't appreciate enough, I don't think.
I think you're absolutely
And your
right.
song, like, she, going back to what she was saying, is just lovely. It
it's
really
kind
is.
Of a nice way to, like, kind of, because everything is, like, so, like, you know, has, like, that, you know, it goes go, 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 and it's all very, like, you know, story-driven. And it kind of just takes a minute to, like, oh, let's pull back for just a second.
That's what I was just going to say. You bring up that. Or it comes up in the course of the show that you're in love with the moon, and that kind of drops right there.
Yeah.
And then a little bit farther on, you do that glorious love song, and it just resonates. It just resonates. Because don't we all kind of sometimes fall in love with something unconventional?
Correct.
I say that to my wife all the time. I say,
no, she says that about you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, no. Yeah, but it is a lovely moment in the show, and it's staged beautifully by Ashley, and it's one of my favorite moments to listen to, too.
And one of the most elaborate sets.
Yes.
It's a very, very
It was wow. very, actually, it was, like, very smart, because I was, like, I think it was originally a certain way, and then Ashley kind of was, like, you know, I have a vision. And then she kind of, like, helped with the scenic designer and said, this is what I want, and then what he created was just
amazing, because the set pieces had three sides, I think, that they revolved. Or
two
at least
sides
two.
On each. So there's two units.
And then the tree flies out
the
of
tree
the
tree.
And,
yeah.
And that was so well done. It looked so real.
Oh, that tree?
Yeah.
As soon as it appeared on stage one day for rehearsal, we saw that tree, and I was like, all right, who made this?
It's
beautiful.
It's one of the prettiest shows I've seen at Circa in a long time. Like, it's just from every, you know, technical aspect, the costumes, the lighting, everything is just a really beautiful picture.
As you say that, it strikes me that this show would be the most excellent example I can think of to introduce somebody to live theater, because it has everything. It has music. It has a love story. It has amazing set.
It is becoming that too. There's a lot of people coming to Circa for the first time that have not been there.
Awesome.
And it's starting to reach a younger audience. Again, to pivot over to Mark's, he's been taking over the social media for Circa. So a lot of that interesting stuff that's been happening is because of him. And it's drawing a younger crowd in. And I think that's really smart that that is the show to bring them in, because it's not your conventional. There's also not a lot of baggage with it of like, oh, we've seen this in high schools. We've seen this in community
theaters. And I think that's a big thing, too, with the high schoolers. They have done the show so many times. And you see those kids that like, oh, I did this in my show in my high school, you know, and it's been my senior year. I want to go see it, you know, in a professional setting, you know, and they see it and they just love it. It's just, it's one of those like cool shows that just brings in all different kinds of people, because everybody recognizes the Addams Family. It's not just, you know, the older crowd who experienced a TV show or experienced the 90s movies. You know, it's an amazing phenomenon.
And the cast is very kind. And Mark is a good example of that. Like, kindness shows, I think, in theater. And Mark is a good example, not to make your head bigger in this room.
I can't fit in here.
I work with a lot of performers that come from all over the country on various, either it's a film project or it's at Circa. And there's some actors you come across and you're like, I'm good. Thank you very much.
One done.
But then Mark, anytime he comes into town, it's lovely when I hear that he's in a show. So it's really
mention that Tristan's in the show as well.
Oh, we don't need to talk
about
me.
He's the uptight guy in the show.
He's the one that everybody just wants to like,
I'm the conservative in the show, I guess.
But you have a marvelous transition.
I do. Yes, he does have a marvelous. But Mark is a lovely, lovely human on and off the stage. So it's great.
Oh, shucks.
Oh, now I want to invite you to dinner.
Listen, I love dinner.
So tell me, what is your favorite role that you've played?
Oh my gosh, there's a list. I have been very lucky.
Well, I said favorite. That's one.
So I've been very lucky this year to play a numerous amount of dream roles. And it's a toss-up between two right now.
Oh,
well, Fester is like up there too. So it's a three. We'll say three. Nostradamus and Something Rotten.
I love that show. I love that show.
The most princess track of princesses.
Walk away with the show.
Yeah, and it's like you have this 1 8-minute number and then you just leave and you come back every now and then. But I had probably the most fun. I actually won a Broadway World Award for the role of Nostradamus.
Cool.
No big deal. No big deal. But my second one would also be Patrick Starr in the SpongeBob musical.
I've not seen that.
It is one of the most fun shows. It's just like how Addams Family has like a whole like, you know, a beautiful story about love and everything. SpongeBob is like a story about like friendship and like that kind of love. So it's not like a romance story, but it's just a beautiful story about friendship. And it's just fun and colorful.
You mentioned your Broadway World Award, but I do want to ask you about, you appeared off Broadway.
I have.
In Frankenstein. The musical, which you also did a film
Frankenstein
version of.
Were you Frankenstein the monster?
I was the creature. So I was a replacement creature in an off-Broadway production of Frankenstein by Eric Sirota. It ran at the what is now currently Playhouse 46. It used to be called St. Luke's Theater back before the pandemic. And I did it, you know, for like a whole summer. And I got to perform at the Broadway at Bryant Park, where our off-Broadway show was selected to open up for the other Broadway shows. So I got to rub elbows with, you know, casts of Mean Girls and Phantom, and it was pretty cool. Yeah.
And then you did the film adaptation as well, where you did win some awards for that.
Did,
Let's
yes.
chat about that a little bit.
Oh, yes.
And why isn't that in your bio and program?
Because I'm not really into film usually. I would love to get into it, because I'm always so nervous about film because it's so close. You know, and like, I feel like I have a goofy face. Clearly, because I'm playing Uncle Fester, I have a goofy face. So.
But, you know, if I can interrupt for a minute, and I am because I'm the host. But my recollection of Uncle Fester from the TV show, he was funny, but he wasn't lovable. Your Fester is both.
So I feel like I bring myself into Fester. Like, I think, you know, there are so many adaptations of Fester. Like, you know, he had Christopher Lloyd. And, you know, it's just like everybody does it differently. And I brought in a more of the childish but still loving and just, I took myself into Fester. So it's my version.
Well, I love it.
Do you find that you do that a lot in your various characters that you put a lot of yourself in?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think a lot of actors do that too. It's like, you know, you have to find yourself in your character. If you don't find that realness inside that character, it's not going to be successful, I don't think. Because it's like, you know, unless you're playing a role that is like a biography, you know, you have to find a way to portray that person who is a real person. But if you have a character who is like an open, like, canvas, you know, find yourself in little moments in that show and you just connect more. You'll find that you work with other actors on stage better because it's like you're just more relaxed and more like it's inside you rather than trying to portray it.
Now, most of your roles are musicals. Have you ever done straight roles?
I have not.
Really?
Yes, I know.
Oh,
I've been wanting to do a play for the longest time. But yeah, ever since I started in 2018 full-time as an actor, it's just been musicals. And but I really would love to do a play. I'm also very nervous because I've played lots of princess tracks where I had like a few lines here and there. And the fact of like trying to learn a whole show and having to keep that in my brain would make me very nervous. But I would love to try it.
Well, what role would you like to play then?
Oh, man. Oh, there's a production, a play that I did a stage reading of. It was called The Pillow Man.
Oh, love The Pillow Man.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
the
I've
role
not heard
of Michael would be such a fun...
That's who I played.
Ah, I
Look
love
at
my...
that.
So Michael is like the stunted character. He's kind of like...
Is it a comedy?
No, it's a very...
It's Michael McDonough. The workshop did it years ago.
Oh, I didn't get to that show.
I did it years ago. Midwest debut, no big deal. But... Yeah, it's been done a few times, but it's a beautiful play. It's dark, very dark.
Dark, but I would also, I mean, comedies would be fun. Like, I would love to do The Odd Couple.
Oh, you'd be great.
That would be so much fun. I think either role would be fun. I think, I mean, I could be the uptight, or that could be the slob. Actually, I'm normally a slob, so that's more like where I live. But I would love to be the uptight, like ooh.
Do you have, in musical theater terms, on to piggyback on that, do you have a role that you've been dying to play in the musical theater realm?
Oh, so many. It's a joke, but like in Wicked, I want to be the Wizard We'll See You Now guy.
Oh, sure.
That's like my dream. I just want to walk on stage, the Wizard Will See You Now, and be done. And that's going to be my Broadway debut.
I love that. I hope it is.
But there's so many. I have, if you go to my TikTok, you can see all my dream roles. But I was very lucky to play. Nostradamus was my number one. It was kind of the role that got away. I had auditioned for the national tour years ago. And I had an in-person audition with the director. And, like, he gave me some great advice during that audition. And it was just, yeah, it was, like, amazing. And I was like, oh, but that did not get the role. So it was very heartbreaking. You know, but the thing is, I walked away with that audition. There was two things he said. Own your height. I'm a very tall person. I'm 6'4". And I always find myself in a constant state of plié, which I'm like squatting down to get eye level with another actor.
Sure.
So I'm constantly doing that to people. And he said to me, it's very gracious of you to do that, to get eye level. But own your height. And I was like, ah, that stuck with me for, you know, I will never forget that advice. And the other one is how to control your comedy. Like, I can be very... Like, comedy is a dangerous thing sometimes because you can just go big and big and big and big and you know where to grow.
Oh, yeah.
You know, breathing in and taking in that comedy and slowly growing it makes it more successful. And when he told me that, he says, control yourself because you're going too big too soon. And I was like, ah,
I'm
going to
note that for myself.
Right?
Next time I'm...
Well, you know... I've gone to a lot of plays, obviously, and Mr. Hicks and I have discussed that, you know, like, oh, they were, and that can work also in drama.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, they peaked too soon.
Mm, yes.
And as you said, they had nowhere to go after
nowhere
that.
To go. So I think you're finding that little moment and just being more subtle. I know, coming from me, I'm not subtle, but but finding that subtle, like, moment. And kind of growing it so that it has somewhere to like really hit home, you know? So I learned that from that director and I will never forget.
That's really
it.
Great.
Let's go back.
Okay, we're going back.
We're going back to school. What did you perform in school?
Well, I actually didn't do musical theater. Oh, I did musical theater in school, but like I didn't go to school for it actually. I actually had no idea what I was doing. I thought I was going to be an art teacher.
You're an artist, too?
I'm an artist. So I set design on the side, and I also, you know, I do a lot of graphics now. I kind of play around with that. But I thought I was going to be an art teacher, and I took a ceramics class, and it ruined my life. And I said, no.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, my, I do not like ceramics, and it really just frazzled me. So I was like, this is not for me. So I decided that, you know, art, I'll just keep it as my fun thing. Mm-hmm. And then I decided that theater was like, oh, okay, it was great. And then life got in the way, and I was like, mm-hmm. oh, maybe I should do something practical. And before I knew it, I had no idea what I was doing. My 20s were just wasted. I was just like, okay.
What was your very first role?
Like as a child or like?
Yes. And then as a pro.
Okay, so my very first play, I did a play. It was I was in middle school. I was in sixth grade. My first play, it was a Secret Garden play.
Okay.
And I played a train person. Yes, I was a train person. I had a newspaper. I was in this moment. It was a high school production, but I was the middle schooler that was in the train holding a newspaper, and my line was, and I don't think anybody will know what it is, but it's whatsoever a moor was. And I'll never forget that line. So that was my very first line.
And that's what you use for your Wicked audition. You just go in and say that one line.
Whatsoever a moor was. but then right after that, the director, you know, was an old friend of the family. And she's like, oh, I had no idea that you, because she knew my father and stuff like that. She's like, oh, my God, I had no idea you were related. And so then I got offered a summer theater musical, which was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
And you played one of the dwarfs.
I did. I was actually shorter than.
You were tally?
I was actually sneezy. And because I had the loudest sneeze in the audition.
And that's show business right there. That's symbolic.
But yeah, so that was my very first, as a child.
Oh, that's precious.
And then, you know, I kind of just did, you know, I just kept doing summer theater a lot. And I got into like community theater when I did Grease. It was at the Glove Theater in Gloversville, New York, where I played the role of Duty.
Sure.
I was bleach blonde at the time.
Ooh.
Because, you know, back in the day, we frosted our tips and, dyed our hair blonde. And I had, like, you know, just the top was blonde. The sides were still brown. So it was quite a look. And I pretended to play guitar. as I do always.
Sure.
And then I, you know, just kept playing around. And then my high school, I got really nervous when I got into high school. Like, our theater program got cut for a little bit. And so we had no theater director for my freshman and my sophomore year. And then somebody finally came in our end of our sophomore year for spring. And we did Pinocchio. And I played Foxio. I was the little fox character. My mother made my costume for me, and it was a great costume. But yeah, and I kind of just, and when I got into college, I, you know, of course, we did all those experimental theater stuff, mm-hmm. and we did the House of Blue Leaves.
Oh, Playcrafters just did that.
What a cool show. I played the producer friend who has the deaf girlfriend. It was wild.
So in college, you studied art?
I studied art. And I kind of just dabbled in theater, and then it wasn't until after my ceramics foul, I decided that theater was for me.
Okay, ceramics wasn't your thing, but what branch of art?
I really loved like painting and studio art. Usually, is like my thing. I really loved. I don't like drawing animals. I hate drawing animals, but I do it for fun, for like you know for money. people ask me to draw their pet portraits, but like animals are so hard.
Why?
Because they look different. I think faces are just easier because they're so symmetrical. And sometimes, like, you know, you get cats that have, like, one ear is like this or a dog is like this. And you're just like, what? I just can't. So many wrinkles in the face.
So many wrinkles. You can do old people. Then you don't do old people either.
And teeth. I avoid teeth, too. People, like, always say, oh, can you do this picture of my aunt? And she's, like, smiling with her full teeth. And I was like, no. No teeth. Find something with no teeth, please.
Ceramics and teeth. Those are
but then I kind of got into set design when I was doing it for community theater,
you've done set design too.
Yes. So I actually currently do it for a local theater. They're doing Mean Girls right now, but I've done a couple sets with them a lot. So I did one show with them as an actor, and then I was like, they're like, oh, would you like to direct? So I started directing, and then I started set designing.
Now see, we need to get into that.
So I kind of just like, you know, in the community theater world, I kind of just did everything. I had every hat. I tried stage managing once. It was not for me.
Why?
That is hard. Stage managers have a hard job.
Explain to our people why that is.
Oh my gosh, you have to be organized. They do everything. So like you have to keep track of all like, you know, the breaks and keep track, make sure the director is not going off tangent. Like you're basically the babysitter to the director.
For everybody.
Yeah. For everybody. Making sure people get to where they need to be and calling the show and like saying, you know, it's hard. And it was like a one and done thing. I was like,
you were like, no.
No, I don't want to be a stage manager. Not for me.
What is it about set designing that you really like so much? I mean, obviously, you come from an art background, so I'm sure that's
right.
Part of it.
I think, you know, lately, because I've been getting a lot of cool projects where I'm just getting a lot of like dark and twisty musicals. And I really love that look of like making things rusty or making it look dingy and grungy. I love the art of it, like how it, you know, how it turns out in the end. Like when I looked at Adam's Family, the set for that, I was like, the painting is beautiful. And that's what I kind of want to do. Like, I just like to paint and create. And I feel like it's a kind of zen, you know, it's kind of like a relaxing moment where, you know, you're by yourself or you're with a little team that is helping you paint and build. And it's just quiet.
So not only do you design, you help create
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't build. I am not a builder whatsoever, but I will come in and I'll paint it and like dress it and make sure it looks good. And yes, I enjoyed
that. Did you tell me your first professional role?
Oh, no.
I kind of went squirrel.
Squirrel. My first professional gig was a show called Hands on a Hard Body.
Sure. Yeah. It's
not dirty, I promise. It's about a car.
Now you piqued my interest and just threw me under the bus.
So Hands on a Hard Body, it's a musical that is based around a documentary about these people competing to win a truck. And they have to keep their hand on the truck. And if the person who, you know, if you remove your hand, you're out of the game.
Right.
So this person created this documentary and introducing all these different characters. And the musical takes these characters and says, you know, why do they want this car? What's so important about this car? And it's just like, it's a really beautiful musical. It's written by Amanda Green, mm-hmm. is the book writer. And then the guy from Fish.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember his name.
It's actually a very good show. It doesn't get done a whole lot because you need a truck on
the
stage.
The truck. It's hard. But it's a really cool show. I played the radio DJ, Frank Nugent, and I had a great time. I just remember my first experience with the director. He handed me a guitar. It's always
here
the guitar.
Here we go with the guitar.
He handed me the guitar, and he's like, okay, now live out your rock star dreams. I've never had...
Rockstar
dreams.
You don't have those. No rockstar dreams.
He's like, so as soon as he said to me, he goes, as soon as I handed you that guitar, everything just shut down. Gone. And I was like, you know, that's legit. So as soon as he took that guitar away, my rock star came out because they just had a microphone and then they had someone else play the guitar.
Could you imagine if somebody handed you a guitar and a potter, like a piece of pottery. Like, my gosh,
like, no,
you would just be...
I walk out.
You would just
walk out.
Be out the door.
It's like, make me the ceramic piece while playing guitar. No.
Oh, no.
No.
That would be terrifying.
But that was my first gig.
Well, now, don't you want to stretch?
No. Not playing guitar. No. I would actually, you know what? In New York City, playing guitar would be very lucrative because, like, you could work at bars and singing and, you know, make some extra cash. But I was like, ugh. Too much
well,
work.
You know, that's interesting because you're such a good singer to be able
musical
to accompany
theater.
Yourself. Musical
from
theater.
Musical theater. I got a good voice for it. I just, I think for that kind of scene, you need to have that like kind of voice. You know, it's like you ever see those guys like on social media and they're like, they talk like this and also they're like, and you're like, whoa, where'd that voice come from?
Maybe that's a character for your TikTok.
I mean,
don't know.
That's true.
Yeah.
There you go. You can experiment on TikTok and get reaction from your followers.
They'd be like, what is that?
Of course, perfect. I don't even know how to get on TikTok, so.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. No. Instagram is take, first step is Instagram.
Yeah.
Take your steps. It's great.
Oh, Instagram. I don't know how to do that either.
That's fine.
It's pretty easy.
It's not hard.
It's like Facebook, but with just pictures.
But they post things on Facebook from TikTok. I have gotten.
I have fallen down
the rabbit hole on those.
Oh yes, the video
many
rabbit hole.
Times. Yeah.
That happens.
Oh, the reels, they get you.
That does.
You can sit there for hours. Just.
I do.
Bloop, bloop, bloop.
That's okay.
That's why my house is so dusty.
But you're semi-retired now, right?
I'm totally retired.
Totally retired.
Well,
you're fine then.
If unless you count what we're doing here.
And you're reviewing and stuff.
Yes.
Don't count yourself out. She's also an actress herself, Miss Hicks over here.
Oh.
Well, she had a lot of anxiety about it.
I had a lot of anxiety about it.
She came to do my show as a guest.
Let's say I used to be an amateur actress.
Yes.
30 years at a local theater, Genesius Guild. We did all classical.
Oh, okay.
Shakespeare and Greek tragedy. Oh. And then after about 25 years, I got cast in the lead of female lead of Harvey last February. When you were sitting there talking about memorizing lines, I haven't done this for 25 years.
Oh my gosh.
And then I got pneumonia.
Because probably from the stress. The stress has opened up all your immunities and gone.
So that was my swan song.
So it's always it's a terrible question to ask an actor, yeah. But what is next? Like, what do you have certain goals and, like, milestones you are hoping to hit in the next, like, 5 years, let's say?
So, yeah, like, I mean, I had set a lot of goals for myself when I first started. And, like, it's always been, like, oh, I want to book an equity house or, like, and I was able to do that with, mm-hmm. with SpongeBob.
What does that mean?
Equity. So, like,
I mean, I know what equity is, but book an equity house.
Oh,
what is
okay.
That?
So there's a theater. If a theater can cast actors who are in the union and non-union.
Okay.
So they have a certain amount of numbered, non-union positions that they can use versus, the equity. And so I was able to, so if you can work at, I wanted to work at an equity house just to get, I had the idea of like, oh, I could do this.
Are you in equity?
I am not.
I just found out very recently that, I mean, you have to earn that. Right?
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Oh,
it used
really?
To be.
You can buy into it now, so it's a little
different.
I can't
remember who I was talking to
that
told me
to
you
have
to. Maybe it was Jake Ladd.
You have to know somebody, and then they have to, like,
sponsor you in.
It was just
and
so
you
much.
Have to do so many roles or something.
So
many hours,
yes.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But now it's an open access. And I've been, like, toying with the idea, like, do I want to join the union? And, honestly, if I join now, it's not really, going to help me out with my retirement at all by any means, because you have to have, a certain amount of time in the union to get the retirement. So I'm already way too late for that.
What's important to note, too, if you are a union member, you cannot work in a non-union house most of the time. So
I do know that.
Yeah.
From,
so like,
Mark,
in this area, they're primarily. Yeah, I mean, there's a few of them. Yeah.
So, like, I think my goal was that I wanted to work in an equity house. And I was like, maybe then I would consider, like, moving on and doing bigger things. And then I did, and I still am not ready. I found this, like, maybe not yet. But I think for next, for me, I kind of just want to, like, I like the travel aspect of this career, because I've been, like, all over the place. I'm from upstate New York normally.
When you say upstate New York, what city?
Like, Albany, New York.
Oh, okay.
The capital. And then I moved to Jersey, but then I traveled over to, like, Florida. I've been here. I've been to Louisville, Kentucky. I've been, all over the place.
How does that work? Do the regional theaters pay your transportation?
Yep. So the sometimes they'll either, if I take my car with me, they'll pay my, my mileage, whatever, or the gas. And then the they'll pay for my flight. And then they have housing offered. Usually, I usually don't take a contract if they don't offer housing. Because it's like, I don't have anybody in the area where I could, like, now that I know people, I could probably say, hey, can I crash? But they offer housing here, which is great. It's been really
fun. We had Brett Hitchcock on Footlights a while back.
Yes.
And, And he shared that. I didn't know all this stuff from regional theater, so that was really interesting.
A lot of theaters ever since the pandemic, too, a lot of things have changed.
Oh, yeah.
People would, some theaters would offer housing in the past, now can't afford it. And so it's just like it's still growing back to where it used to be.
Mm-hmm. But if they don't offer the housing, you get a stipend or something for it in addition to salary?
It's all contract-based, so it's like it's a business transaction, basically. So everything that the theater offers to you is in the contract. You can negotiate and say, hey, look, since you don't have housing, can you, you can work it out with them and say, can you offer this for me? Or, it's kind of like that barter thing where you're bartering your career.
So you don't have an agent?
I just got one.
Oh.
Yes, I am now a Creative Media Partners client. They are really wonderful. I just started with them. They always like reach out to me and they ask me like, hey, how's things going? They'll send me auditions. But lately it's been a lot of commercial and a lot of stuff like
so
this.
I might see you on TV sometime.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. It's very new to me.
Hawking toilet paper. You could put on the bear suit.
That's right. I would love that. No, but yeah, he's like, I just like started doing commercial auditions and stuff like that.
Cool.
And, every now and then I'll get a theater. It's kind of nice because now I don't have to do the negotiations anymore. I hand it off because that usually is so uncomfortable as an actor trying to negotiate your own contract.
Yes, yes.
It gives me agita, just like thinking about like, hey, I would love this. And like you send it off to the email and you don't hear anything for like 5 minutes. You're like, oh my God, they're gonna rescind their offer. This is kind of like.
I had a job. Back a while back, I used to work at a elevator company that is no longer, it's no longer the company name that I worked for. And I started out in the contract department negotiating. I hated that. You said you hated work.
Oh, yeah.
You weren't happy in your hospital job.
No.
And that was just awful. But fortunately, I worked my way up the ladder.
Oh, I worked in insurance,
so I can really relate to what you
just said. It's not fun.
The only one that was good was negotiating with Disney because there is no negotiation with Disney.
That's right. It's like that's nope. Set.
You like, do whatever they say. If you want the job, you do whatever they say.
Absolutely.
Can I go back again?
Yeah, go back.
And if this is too personal, you don't have to.
I'm an open book.
You're an open book. Mom and Dad.
Yes.
What's their background and did they support you?
Of course. My father unfortunately passed away back in 2007.
Oh, sorry.
So it's been, but my father was a musician. He's the one that got me into the world of theater. And I remember as a kid, he would tell me stories about, when I was in high school, I played the genie in Aladdin and not the Disney version, but it was like, he was like the genie of the ring, like the old Aladdin story. And he would just tell me all these stories about his theater love. And he went back into being a musician. He was a bass player, and a piano player. So he played in the band a lot and he just talked about it so much about it. My mother she worked at the hospital. So that's where I got the hospital.
Sure.
My mother was a full-time hospital worker, working in a, she was a transcriptionist.
That's a tough job.
Type so fast. I could hear her. I'm like, oh my God. Do you know what you're writing? She was more into the crafting. She loved the craft. And she's very.
Did she do ceramics?
No. Well, she used to paint on ceramics. I don't think she.
Oh boy,
I'm sorry.
That's funny.
I just had to say.
Oh my God, I'm having trauma.
I'm gonna get you a ceramic
no,
guitar.
Don't do it.
Delivered to your dressing room.
But yeah, she. It was kind of funny because when I was going to school, my mother was, my father's always the kind of guy who was like, "Are you happy? Good. Okay. Who cares what you do? He doesn't care what you do as long as you're happy." My mother was always like. And when I gave up the art teacher career, she's like, I just paid all this money. Da, da, da. I was like, Mom. And she was so mad when I left the school. And came back home. She was like, I can't believe it. Wasted. But now then, ever since, I went professional, she's like, oh,
My son is.
She's so proud.
My son is Uncle Fester.
I just talked to her. She's like so bummed she can't be here because it's like it's hard, you know, to travel from New York to get, you know, over here. It's difficult for her, and you know, with her health and everything, it's really difficult. But she has been my rock, always constantly supporting me, and like I always tell her, like I know for Christmas. I'm always like saying, oh, I'm booked for Christmas. I haven't been home for Christmas for so long. And she's always like, okay, I'm kind of, that's sad. But, you know, I'm very happy that you got a job. You know, she's it's very sweet. So my mom has been my
Now
like,
you're
going
to make me cry.
I know. So it's just like the way my mother had turned around to the idea of me, you know. And just seeing me like being, you know, having as much success as I have been getting so far in the career. She's just been like, oh, this is great, you know. And she always like, you know, sees on Facebook and she's like, you know, shares it, and she's like, that's my son.
That's adorable.
But yeah, she's awesome. But yeah, my father was the musician of the family, and he was one of six kids, and they all were in the theater
world.
And
he didn't teach you how to play the guitar.
Okay, so let me tell you something. Learning from your parents is obnoxious. No. Yeah. He taught me how to read the piano, which is great, and I could, like, plunk if I need to. But, like, when he was teaching me how to play the piano, I was like, I can't do this anymore. No, because it's like your dad turns into a teacher mode. You're like, oh, come on, Dad.
I see. But, yeah. I can kind of relate to that. My mother was that way with stuff.
Yeah.
She used to throw me out of the kitchen because I'm left-handed.
Oh.
Sounds like you two have a lot to unpack here.
That's right. There's so much emotional
damage.
And
she never
came
to my shows.
But my father used to, okay. So
she never said, that's my daughter up there.
My parents would always come to my shows in high school, and I would laugh because I knew my father was in the audience because he was snoring. I'd be like, in the middle of, I'm doing like On the Town in high school, or Damn Yankees, I was playing the devil, whatever. And all of a sudden you hear, oh, that's my dad. That's my dad.
That's amazing.
But you know what? He was there. That's all that matters. You know, mom and dad were always there. So, and I knew they were there because I could hear that snore.
Oh, that is too funny.
But yeah, the parents are great.
What do you have to ask?
Well, I was just going to ask, you know, for someone, because you did get a late start in the business, and for someone out there that might be also thinking about, hey, I'm not happy with this. I really want to do this, but I'm in my 30s. There's no way I could start doing this. Like, what kind of advice would you have for them?
Right.
Because I think there are people that are like, it's too late for me.
Or even concrete things they can do to get started.
Too late. I thought the same thing as when I turned 30, I was like, you know what, this is useless. Because you know, when you're in your 20s, you're like trying to figure out what you're doing, and you're like, oh, I'm too scared. I can't do it. And then just doing it, getting like, you know, just forgetting all the what ifs and just going for it.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, with my dad, you know, passing, that like, you know, I don't want to live with no regret.
Yeah.
You know, so if I, you know, if I don't want to have that feeling of like, oh, if I did that, oh, I would have had a great time. You know, if I die tomorrow, I'm happy. Like, this is like, I've done what I wanted to do. You know, I want to do more. You know, but like, I think as far as giving advice, I think just go for it and just find joy, you know, whether it's in performing or whether it's behind the scenes or if you want to be a director or if you want to, you know, paint, go for it. Like, just don't wait. Just go for it. Obviously, when you're ready, you know, don't put yourself into financial ruin. But like, you know, I went to New York City with $1,000 in my pocket and I was like, I'm going to try. Here we go. And I haven't looked back. And I always have this idea too, is like especially when I go into auditions or if I go into a performance, if I feel stupid, I'm doing it right.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
I've made a whole career on that.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, if you feel stupid, you're just like, okay.
Oh no, go into that a little more.
Yeah. So like, whenever I, feel nervous about a character or whatever, or if I'm going on stage and like if it feels like the audience is like judging me or they're like ugh or like they're laughing at me because I feel stupid, I'm doing it correctly. And I can't describe it. It's like you know, just having fun and not worrying about the outside. You know what I mean? If I feel dumb, they're all enjoying it. If I'm enjoying it, they're enjoying it, you know?
Yeah. I think joy's infectious too. So if
I was
you,
just
going to
say that you can always tell when an actor is loving what they're doing and when the cast is melded and they're just having fun. It elevates the show
for sure, for sure. And like with Adam's Family, it's just every show I've worked at circa 21 has been such a joyous occasion. Even Just Desserts, I mean, of all shows, you know, it was like a show that nobody knows. I still enjoyed myself. I still had a great time. I met some wonderful people. And then coming back for White Christmas, I played, you know, the bit part of the yup guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, playing that small role, but I still had a wonderful time. And, like, going into work, thinking, you know, saying, oh, my God, I get to do this. This is, like, not many people can say that. You know, they can go into a career and say, you know, like, oh, I have to go to work today. I'm so miserable. But I'm like, I can't wait to go to work because I love my job. I'm very happy with my job. And, yeah, so I just go in that energy.
Yeah.
You know, it's all, you know, I'm so grateful for, like, all the opportunities I've received. And it's been a lot of fun.
Okay, why should people go? What does community theater mean to you?
Oh, my God, it means everything. I really think if you love theater, start a community theater. It is where I found my love. You know, completely, where like, you know, yeah, you can do it in high school and everything. But as soon as you do that community theater and work with people who have that same passion, it's infectious. It's like, oh, you love it. I love it. We all love it. You know, it's like we all scream for ice cream. You know, we all scream for theater. And I think community theater is a huge part of my life. And I am very grateful for that.
And I think what you just said emphasizes why people who have daytime jobs and they're not getting paid to do theater, they're just doing it because they love doing it.
Right.
I mean.
Well, I mean, I tell my partner all the time, I tell her, hey, look, I do this for money and everything. And I still find joy in it. But, like, I do miss sometimes going back to that community theater world and going, you know, I'm just doing this for fun. It's like there's no pressure, you know. It's a different feeling, you know. Mm-hmm. I come to work is my job now. It's work, yes. But when I went to community theater, I was like, this is my escape. You know, and it still has that feeling every day, like, you know, but community theater was that escape.
Do you pretty much go from job to job, or do you have, shall we call it, a desert?
I have been very lucky. I've been having very consistent bookings within, you know, close to each other. There's been times where I have, like, 3 months off, maybe, or maybe 2 months off. And in that time, I go back to my restaurant job, and I'll do that for as long as I'm there. And then I'll just come back. So I always consider the job that I book, like a theater job, is my vacation. You know, the work is outside of being booked in a show, like auditioning, trying to find monologues, get your headshots done, all that extra stuff, and like emailing theaters and saying, "Hi, I'm interested in your season," or "I want to do this show." That is the work. You're constantly working. But when you book a show, it's like, this is it. Vacation time.
Until halfway through that run where you're like, oh, gosh, I got to get
job.
Back to it.
You know, back into that mode.
That's probably something people don't realize, too.
I was just
going
to say,
so
I had no idea that that you had to do that. But now, as you say, you have an agent that's going to be doing that for you?
So, yeah, I have a manager now. I still do my own research. I'll start, you know, looking for jobs on my own. And they also will send me stuff they receive. What's nice about having a manager or an agent is that they'll have access to things because they have relationships with other casting directors.
Right.
So they might get something that I will never see. And they'll say, hey, we're looking for this type of person. And they're like, oh, I have somebody in mind. Mm-hmm. And they'll send me in, you know, that kind of thing. So I have done it myself my whole career so far since I started doing it professionally. I did all the research. I did all my submissions, everything. And then letting go of that was a little hard. You know, every now and then, because you have that person you have to hand off, you're like, okay, this is your job now. Like, I received an offer for, you know, let's say I received an offer from a theater that I had a relationship with. I have to hand it off to my manager to handle the rest of it. And it makes you feel uneasy. It's like, I know this person, you know, and I will literally do anything for this person, but they have to finish.
You worry
it.
That you might offend them?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And it's scary, but the thing is, like, I have to remember, like, you know, it's the business and theaters really know. They have to deal with it. It's like one of the things they have to handle. You know, they have to handle. But yeah, it's been like, yeah. So having a manager is great. if you're ready for it. That's another thing. It's like, you know, if you're not ready to, like, take a big step in doing more auditions and, like, knowing that, you know, there are bigger auditions, but you're going to lose money on top of that because you have to pay them as well.
Have you ever had a theater contact you say, I've got this role, I want you to play it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. Happens a lot. Like, especially ones I've worked with. Like, you know, I especially at home, I have a theater. I work up there, upstate New York. And they're like, hey, would you be interested in this? And I'm like, yeah, why not? Now I have to, you know, since I have a manager now, I have to say, yes, I am. But let me send you over to my to my agent.
Call my agent.
Call my agent.
Do you have anything more?
No.
This is my last question.
Delightful human.
Oh, my God. That's all I'm, like, I have rambling. Sorry about it.
No, we love it.
No. I'd love to go out for a beer with you.
Yes.
It's Friday night. You're not as familiar with the Quad Cities, but we have a lot going on here, not just community theaters, right, but festivals and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. So it's Friday night. I don't have anything else to do. Why should I go to a community theater performance?
Support your local artists because they are bringing that joy to the stage that you're going to feel if you go to a community theater. So, like, I feel like I would go to see support a local theater because, you know, they're having fun, and I want to have fun, too. So, like I said, joy is infectious. So, if you have that joy on that stage, you're going to feel it in the audience.
I love the way everyone we ask that, almost everyone has a different answer.
Ah.
And that's great. So, Mark Christopher, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And I'm Chris Hicks.
And I'm Tristan Tapscott.
Break a leg.
Thanks for listening to Footlights, a community theater podcast from the Quad Cities. Footlights is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. If you'd like to explore more podcasts from WVIK or support our work, you can do that at WVIK.org or by downloading the WVIK app.